So kicking off the sci-fi show, let's look at War of the Worlds. Now, Red, what's the first thing that comes to mind when you think of War of the Worlds?
Being terrified and hiding behind the sofa when I was a little boy.
Well, it could be this.
I can see it now. It's a white handkerchief tied to a pole. Flag of truce. If those creatures know what that means, what anything means. Wait a minute, something's happening. A humped shape is rising out of the pit. I can make out a small beam of light against a mirror. What's that? There's a jet of flame springing from the mirror and it leaps right at the advancing men. It strikes them head on. Lord, they're turning into flames. Now the whole field's caught up by the woods, the fires, the gas tanks of the automobiles spreading everywhere. Coming this way now, about 20 yards to my right.
Ladies and gentlemen, due to circumstances beyond our control, we are unable to continue the broadcast from Grover's Mill. Evidently, there's some difficulty with our field transmission.
That was, of course, the drama by Orson Welles.
Yeah, I first heard that at a very impressionable age.
Or, of course, it could be the book that inspired everything, The War of the Worlds by H.G. Wells. Unabridged and available from RNIB, it's read by Robin Holmes.
A thousand such questions struggled together in my mind as I watched that vast sentinel shape. And in the back of my mind was the sense of all the huge unknown and hidden forces Londonward. Had they prepared pitfalls? Were the powder mills at Hounslow ready as a snare? Would the Londoners have the heart and courage to make a greater Moscow of their mighty province of houses?
Which I read under the covers soon after hearing the Orson Welles version.
Or you're possibly aware of one of the two movie versions.
This could be the beginning of the end for the human race. For what men first thought were meteors or the often ridiculed flying saucers are in reality the flaming vanguard of the invasion from Mars.
We welcome you! We're friends! Yeah!
Tell me what you saw.
Whose car is this?
Get in.
Get out of the truck. I'm not kidding, Ray.
Get in, Manny, or you're gonna die.
Get out! Rachel!
But I think I'm a bit more familiar with this.
The double album of Jeff Wayne's musical version of War of the Worlds was one of the best-selling albums of all time, and also one of the longest-running. I asked Jeff Wayne what it was about the original H.G. Wells book that inspired a whole rock opera.
Well, it goes back to the mid-1970s, and my dad reminded me at one point in my career that one of my aspirations was to try to find a story or two that I really felt passionate about and to try to, from a composing and producing point of view, turn it into some form of musical work, whether for record, for live stage, or performance. The first thing was to find the story, and he was right, and we started reading all sorts of books, not particularly just science fiction, and one of them was the H.G. Wells story of the War of the Worlds, and he handed me this book just as I was going out on tour with an artist that I was producing at the time and who had signed to my fledgling label, and we were enjoying a good run together, and he was a terrific artist, David Essex, who's still very much going in his career. And as I was on tour, you get plenty of time, and I started reading this book, and I discovered this amazing Victorian tale that had quite a visionary appeal about it, and the way H.G. Wells saw life through the eyes of Victorian humanity, but with a very futuristic concept of aliens from Mars that had amazing weapons and machines that certainly dominated the Earth and was a very terrifying read, in fact, when you try to place yourself in Victorian times when all you'd have is maybe rifles and cannons to defend yourselves with. So that's what got me going with it.
Next morning, a crowd gathered on the common, hypnotized by the unscrewing of the cylinder. 2 feet of shining screw projected when, suddenly, the lid fell off. Two luminous, disc-like eyes appeared above the rim. A huge, rounded bulk, larger than a bear, rose up slowly, glistening like wet leather. Its lipless mouth quivered and slavered, and snake-like tentacles writhed as the clumsy body heaved and pulsated.
Now, did the structure of the book, or rather, the two books, to be more accurate, did the structure of the books influence the composing and the final work?
Yeah, well, you know, after I read it, I discovered that H.G. didn't write it as a book. It was written as an episodic adventure for a magazine called Pearson's in 1897, and it was its popularity that then his publishers asked him to novelize it. And he divided it into two books. One was The Coming of the Martians, and book two is The Earth Under the Martians. And it was so well structured, and I think maybe because the chapters were so succinct, probably going straight back to the weekly edition or biweekly edition that Pearson's used to publish his chapters in, and I kept it all very much intact. So the opening chapter to the book is called The Eve of the War, and it reads sort of like an overture in a way of something pending, something that was ominous was about to happen. So my first composition and sequence is called The Eve of the War, and I wanted a piece of music that grabbed the listener's attention as if something was about to happen without revealing too much.
Would you like some coffee or some tea?
Some coffee would be fine, thank you.
Take it, Richard.
Straight black. Or maybe some sugar in it.
Okay.
At Talking Books, we know the importance of a great voice, and War of the Worlds has one of the best. What was it like working with the narrator, Richard Burton?
Richard in the mid-1970s was somebody who had a fair amount of publicity as a hellraiser, so I wasn't sure really how the working relationship was going to work out. But the man that walked through the studio door was probably the most charismatic and prepared professional that I'd ever worked with. He was so totally prepared for his work, and to give you an example, we had a contract with him that allowed us to call on him for 5 studio days, and he did not only what appears on the album, which is about 77 sequences, but at least as much again, and he did it all in one day, and just a bit of repair work for about 3 hours on a second day, and that was it.
The slow, deliberate movements, the unconscious body was dragged away, and there was nothing I could do to prevent it. With slow, deliberate movements, the unconscious body was dragged away, and there was nothing I could do to prevent it. With slow, deliberate movements... I'll do the whole thing again. That's what comes of coffee. With slow, deliberate movements, his unconscious body was dragged away, and there was nothing I could do to prevent it.
He took direction. There were takes that we did that we thought was terrific. He said, no, I can do that better, and he did it better.
While that voice sounded, the solitude, the desolation, had been endurable. By virtue of it, London had still seemed alive, and the sense of life about me had upheld me. I'm sorry, that's a murderous 4 words. I'll do it again.
So he was quite the opposite of the reputation that preceded him, and I was very privileged to work with him.
A few young men crept closer to the pit. A tall funnel rose, then an invisible ray of heat leapt from man to man, and there was a bright glare as each was instantly turned to fire. Every tree and bush became a mass of flames at the touch of this savage, unearthly heat ray.
And what is it about the H.G. Wells book, written so long ago, that makes it still so popular today?
I think its core themes are very relevant today, just as much as it was in the 1890s when H.G. wrote it. And that, for example, his Martians with their tentacles was really an analogy for the expansionism of nations and the conquest through the use of power. And he felt that if power, even in his own nation's hand, was wrongly used, it was something he wanted to criticize. And we were at the height of the expanding British Empire at that point, and that's what he was taking a pop at, and I sort of like that. I think just look at today's world, and there's as much territorial invasions and conflicts going on in the world today, which has as much sort of analogy to the H.G. Wells story of the 1890s. So I like that, you know, and it's very rich in its textures from a composer's point of view.
Thanks to Robert and to Jeff Wayne. Now that I'm no longer hiding behind the sofa, I can tell you that War of the Worlds by H.G. Wells is available in various formats from the RNIB library, including an abridged version, an unabridged version, and I believe Robert has found another version.
I was so excited when I found this. You can join the actors from Star Trek and Star Trek The Next Generation as they recreate this classic radio thriller from Orson Welles. The pace and details make it clear why the 1938 broadcast of an eyewitness report of an invasion from Mars caused a nationwide panic. The cast are John DeLancey, who played Q in Star Trek The Next Generation, Gates McFadden, who played the Doctor on TNG, and Leonard Nimoy, who played Spock. There's also Armin Shimerman and Brent Spiner among the cast from the LA Theatre Works series.
What will they do to us? I thought it all out. Right now, we're caught as we're wanted. The Martian only has to go a few miles to get a crowd on the run, but they won't keep doing that. They'll begin catching us, systematic-like, keeping the best, and storing us in cages and things. They haven't begun on us yet.
Not begun?
Not begun. All that's happened so far is because we don't have sense enough to keep quiet. Bothering them with guns and such stuff, and losing our heads and rushing off in crowds. Now, instead of our rushing around blind, we gotta fix ourselves up. According to the way things are now, cities, nations, civilization, progress.
And if that's so, what is there to live for?
There won't be any more concerts for a million years or so.
War of the Worlds by H.G. Wells is available in many formats from the RNIB Talking Books Library.